since everyone seems eager to get moving. I'll call the meeting to order. This morning, we'll, oh, let the record reflect the representatives O.C. Smith, Anderson, Kelly, and Rudd are present. This morning, we'll take up House Bill 133, Selection of State Land by Municipalities. I think you all have a copy of the proposed committee substitute, which is headed Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 241. And that is the bill that I'd like to direct our hearing to this morning. Mr. Mike Smith, the director of the State Division of Lands, is here, and I asked him to give some of the background to the development of this proposed committee substitute. Mr. Smith, could you step forward and...
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. My name is Mike Smith. I'm director of the Alaska Division of Lands. As the chairman stated, the draft bill before you, we are hoping will be introduced by your committee as a substitute for HB 133, which was submitted by Representative Parr. The purpose of this bill, in a nutshell, is to clear up a very tenuous existing policy, which is almost one which is just essentially not.
Go ahead, Mr. Smith. Sorry for the interruption.
The genesis of the state's municipal land selection program goes back to about 1963. At that time, the Alaska legislature passed the Mandatory Borough Act, which forced organization of certain areas of the state into boroughs. One of the palliatives that the legislature also gave to the municipalities that they were forcing to organize was the right to select 10% of the, quote, vacant, unappropriated, unreserved land, unquote, within their boundaries. It was basically just a two-paragraph statement, which had very little to do with policy and certainly nothing in the way of definitions about what they meant by vacant, unreserved, unappropriated, what municipal boundaries or at what time. Although this was probably a very good idea in 1963, as we come 13 years later, we find it just isn't working. It has not really worked for the last 5 or 6 years, if even before then. Each municipality addressed its nebulous right in a different way because of differences in size of municipalities, differences in population, also differences in the land that the state actually had selected and received title to. There was a tremendous variety of situations that existed. Certain areas with low populations had selected just huge amounts of land. Other municipalities with very large populations had virtually no land available. On top of this was the question that, since the act also said that they could only receive 10%, everybody was asking what was their 10% entitlement, and nobody could say because there were no definitions. Each municipality, of course, interpreted the rule of the statute differently. And since no regulations were ever adopted under the terms of the act, it was just virtually impossible to say. When we would make a decision in favor of one, or make a decision as to a definition, say, of vacant, unreserved, and unappropriated, half the municipalities were very happy, and the other half were ready to scalp the division. In about the last 4 or 5 years, this program, because of these problems, just began grinding to a halt. And approximately 2 years ago, when we began to address the problem, we had several, well, the biggest problem was just lack of information. Nobody knew even how many acres for certain there were within municipalities, how much the title the state even had, and it took approximately 18 months to actually generate this information, going back through files which were in some cases over a decade old. Late last summer, in early autumn, things began to move. The municipalities moved together and began to discuss what they saw as a common problem, which it certainly was. By that point, the division had pretty much gathered together the information showing the amount of acreage within municipalities, how much had been patented, tentatively approved, selected, and out of this began to emerge the delimits, you might say, of the problem. In November, we had a Municipal League meeting in Fairbanks at which the administration made a presentation and talked at some length with various municipalities. And out of this did emerge the consensus that the only way that this problem was going to be solved was for the state and the municipalities to sit down, work out together some legislation, and bring it before the legislature. That was the only way it was going to be able to be solved. This began in earnest early in 1977, in early January. And what you see before you is probably the ninth or tenth draft of a bill which was hammered out, as I say, in early middle January, and then has undergone a tremendous amount of discussion and revision here and there, new areas or new paragraphs where a certain municipality would come in. And because its interests and situation was so different, it was kind of brought in by handling it in a slightly different way. And I think this is symptomatic of the whole problem. You cannot begin to expect to handle communities that range from just a few people to almost 200,000 in a state the fifth the size of the United States and expect one two-paragraph bill concerning land to have handled it. And so what you have before you then is a consensus compromise bill, you might say, acceptable to the state and, as far as we know, acceptable to virtually all the municipalities that have been involved. With no further background on that, I'd be more than happy to answer questions on some of the history, and then if not, I'd be very happy to move into just a basic outline of what the contents of the bill are.
Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chairman, thank you. You said that this is a compromise bill that's been hammered out between the administration and, as far as you know, as many of the municipalities. How many municipalities have you reviewed this with?
Okay, the ones that have been actively involved, as I just look down here, and it's mainly been the boroughs we've been involved with, simply because they account for probably 97 or 98% of the land entitlement. Of the ones that we have worked with specifically would be Anchorage, Juneau. I would include Sitka in that because, although, well, they've had direct input. I do not believe Bristol Bay has responded to sending copies, etc. Fairbanks, North Star Borough. I do not believe Haynes has responded. Kenai Borough, Ketchikan Borough, Kodiak Borough.
The ones you're naming up are those that we've been working with?
Yes. Yes. The answer is yes. That we've been working with or have, you know, like Juneau, Sitka, and Ketchikan were not involved in the early going, have been very intensely involved during the last month. Mm-hmm. So they've all been involved. Matanuska, the Sitna Borough, very much involved. North Slope Borough has never responded to letters, et cetera. We have sent copies of the bill. So of the 11 boroughs, then, that would be 8 that have been involved.
Mr. Kelly?
Mr. Smith, on the fiscal note, is it your intention that once the selection process is complete, that these 7 new positions will be phased out?
On the fiscal note, I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you said. Yes, I spoke with Senator Orsini on that, I guess it was earlier this week. We felt, and the original language in the bill talked about a 5-year period during which this would probably need to be hammered out on. He suggested, and we concurred, that this could be a sunset provision. We feel that within 5 years, this should be finished. And I believe that he was going to insert some type of legislative intent that it was a kind of a time-specific operation. And to that extent, I see no problem. Certainly, the land management people that would be working closely with municipalities, I think, would be finished at that point. Whether the logistical problem of actually transferring the massive amounts of land involved on the time frame that we're trying to use here to speed it up, one, perhaps two of those might have to stay longer. But I would say at least 5 would certainly be able to be sunset, if that's the word. I'm sure it's a verb or noun these days.
Mr. Osi?
Yes, there's markups in these. Are they meaningful or not?
I'm not sure what you received.
I think, let's see.
For example, this one's a delete.
Are there things on the front page? No? I don't know what those marks are. I don't know where those came from. You must have gotten a different copy from the rest of us. I'm sorry. I don't know where those marks came from.
Okay.
Are there other questions for Mr. Smith? If you would run through it, Mr. Smith,
okay.
I'd appreciate it.
The two big questions that were involved in reaching agreement on this were essentially, one, how much, and two, which? And that is, how much acreage would each municipality entitled to, and then secondly, which acreage? And it's within that simple two-question context that virtually all the bill addresses. The first part of it is addressed in the first section, section 202, how much acreage. For the large boroughs, we felt it was absolutely mandatory that we actually come up with a figure, with an absolute number of acres. Because of the tremendous amount of time involved and need to go through records to get a review for each municipality in the state, there just simply was not time. And again, we probably account for 98% of the acreage here. Once we've established this entitlement, probably the biggest single problem that has faced us in the last 13 years has passed, and that is just how much was a municipality entitled to. And the Act simply for the 11 boroughs interprets in paragraph A the definition that's found in paragraph B, and that is how much acreage each municipality would be entitled to. To get this, we did what we thought was, we came up with a pretty good formula, which we felt dealt very fairly with each municipality. We interpreted the legislative intent of the original Act of 10% of the vacant, unreserved, and unappropriated land, so that we took each municipality and we plotted the amount of vacant, unreserved, and unappropriated land within its boundaries. And since this fluctuates over a period of time during the last 13 years, we picked the high point, the point at which the municipality had the maximum amount of vacant, unreserved, and unappropriated land, and we took 10% of that for that community. So every community virtually has a different time period. Some in 1965 as early as that, others as late as 1973, I believe it is. And then the Act indicates that for the smaller communities, where we're talking about entitlements of probably everything from 50 to maybe only 100 or 200 acres, we will determine this on the basis of that same definition within a specific period of time. The rest of the Act essentially speaks to the question, which acres? How do they get the acres to fulfill that entitlement? And this is split into two areas. Once the entitlement has been determined, the natural question is, okay, which land? For almost all the communities, this is their question, which land? For certain communities, Anchorage is one, and Kodiak may well be a second one, and there may be others, but they would not be probably one of the boroughs. That question isn't really accurate because there is basically no land or very little land for them to select from that is vacant, unreserved, and unappropriated. And so to handle this situation where a municipality has an entitlement but does not have enough land to fulfill that entitlement, there is a separate section here which grants payment in lieu of land, a certain fixed amount of money which the municipality could receive when there was not sufficient vacant, unreserved, and unappropriated land from which it could fulfill its entitlement. Now, going to the first of those two, fulfillment of land entitlements by actual land selection, the Act says, okay, there are three steps for a municipality, or have been historically, to receive land. They select it, the state approves it to them, and once they have a survey done, the state issues patent to them. So for any given municipality, we take the amount of land that they're entitled to under the first section, and then we say, any land which has been patented to a municipality, you know, it's theirs already, and we apply that total against their entitlement. For those acres which were approved to the municipality, the bill requires an initial review to ensure that those approvals were done according to existing statute at the time. And this will mean that the very large majority, 98-99% of the land which has been approved, will also, following this review, be ready to go for patents. And again, just waiting for the municipality to survey the land, and the land will move. This again is credited against the entitlement established in the first section. This leaves then a remaining entitlement, the number of acres a municipality has yet to receive. And this will be decided, which acres will be decided during a joint process between the municipalities and the state. This is something that municipalities had indicated a very strong desire to have and would probably be the first time. And that is where the division would be able to be responsive to, and the municipalities would essentially offer their ideas about what they intend to do, what type of lands they're interested in selecting within their municipality. Once this process, joint process, has been accomplished, the municipality can select the land, and this brings us to the next step, and that is, how do we determine whether or not the land would be approved to a municipal selection? In the past, whether or not a given parcel of land that was selected by a municipality was approved to that municipality was really a decision made with virtually, I'm sure there was reason going into it, but it was never documented, and there were no criteria or framework within which the decision had to be made. It was essentially the director's decision whether he felt it should be approved or not approved. And I think everybody feels that this is untenable. There, with no ground rules, it becomes very much of a, maybe the condition of somebody's peptic ulcer on that morning. What we have done in section F, 204F, which begins on page 4 and goes to page 5, at least on my copy, and I believe we have the same copy, is we have essentially said that the legislature has given intent as to the role of the state government in its land holdings within municipalities, and also indicated which roles it feels the local municipalities should have with respect to state lands within those borders. It essentially says that those lands that have values that are of greater than local significance would remain in state hands, and those values or those lands which would be of primarily local concern would in fact be eligible for selection by a municipality. And it goes further than just that generic definition by specifically laying out those functions or those responsibilities that historically remain with the state and those which the state has authorized or delegated to local municipalities in giving them the authority to actually organize. And these are such things as, with respect to state interests, energy and minerals, air, water under our water appropriation, water quality laws, etc. Things of a more local nature are such things as local transportation, residential, commercial, industrial areas, the type of thing that is really not the state's bag with respect to impact on local concerns. And it's on the basis of those criteria, for the first time, that a municipality, that the Division of Lands makes a decision as to whether the land should be approved. And it certainly gives the municipality some concrete framework within which it knows how its elections are going to be judged. And if it feels that the decision has been made incorrectly within those within that framework, it essentially has a right of appeal and ultimately, of course, to the courts if that is necessary.
Certainly. What is this, you kind of clarify, a selection by a municipality of the land, which is probably, a selection of the land whose ownership must be retained by the state to protect the value, which are primarily of greater than local concern, shall be disapproved.
Okay, that speaks specifically to what I was just outlining. The definition in subsection F sets up specific categories that are of greater than local concern, and it defines certain categories which are of local concern. And what this merely says is when the preponderance of values of a piece of land fall under the area of local concern, if a municipality selects it, the division has to approve it. If in fact a parcel of land that the municipality selects...
Well, could you give a kind of example or...
A municipality might select an area for land selection, and the state looks at it and says, we have very good reason to believe, having already have an oil and gas lease underneath it, that and we already have a well in the near vicinity which has struck commercial or almost commercial quantities of natural gas. At this time, we don't feel it's appropriate to transfer the surface ownership because the development of minerals and energy within the state of Alaska is primarily a state responsibility, not a local government responsibility. And so the state might say, there's a well coming in here, a test well going to be drilled next year, we'll hold your selection in abeyance. If nothing comes up, there's probably nothing underneath and we see no problem with transferring the surface. And if there's something does come up, we would say in that case we would retain it.
Mr. Smith? Oh, excuse me, Mr. Rosenthal. That makes me think of, is the state going to be transferring only surface rights?
Yes, that's all the original act ever intended. In fact, I don't think the state has the authority because of the Statehood Act, the restriction on the transfer of the subsurface rights to even consider the other.
How do we do that in a Cook County land exchange?
That gets into an evolved situation. The reason we can't do it is because the federal government said in the Statehood Act we couldn't. In the Cook County Land Exchange, Congress specifically waived that Statehood Act requirement.
Go ahead.
The second of the two areas of how an entitlement is fulfilled is the concept of payment in lieu of land, which is in Section 208, I believe found on page 7 through 9 of your draft. This is really an escape clause for any municipality that find itself in the position that there just isn't enough land available for it to select within its municipal boundaries. And as I mentioned, there are probably two that find themselves in this unfortunate situation, Kodiak to some extent, and probably Anchorage. And what this does is it sets up an accounting system whereby all revenues that come from the sale, lease, or other revenue disposing methods for non-mineral resources on state lands. What we're talking about here is the sale, lease of non-trust lands, sale of gravel, timbered development, this type of thing. These receipts would be kept, a separate accounting would be kept of these receipts, even though the receipts would go into the general fund. And each year, a municipality who did not have enough land to fulfill its entitlement would be able to request that they receive payment for a certain number of these remaining entitlement acres. And the governor would request the legislature to appropriate whatever the amount is, which I'll touch in a minute, to that municipality as payment in lieu of the land which they have never been able to receive from the state. The legislature obviously is not bound to fund this in any one year. Because you cannot, of course, bind future legislatures. What this statement merely is it's a statement of intent that at this point the legislature thinks that this is probably a fair and equitable way of going about it, but on a year-to-year basis they will look at whatever appropriation request exists and make a decision at that time. The way in which the amount of dollars would be determined is found right in the middle of page 8. For the cumulative total of the first 10,000 acres that a municipality might be able to exchange, each acre would be considered to be worth $1,500. The next 10,000, $750, and anything over 20,000, $350. The latter figure probably will never be reached, but it's hard to say right now. What this does then is, if a municipality which is entitled to in any given year to request in lieu payment of up to 15% of its remaining entitlement, if they come in with the first $3,000 and there was sufficient money in the account, they would receive what would be $4.5 million if in fact there was that money in the account. The expectation is of course conjecture at this time. We are receiving now somewhere between about $2.5 to $3 million a year, and we expect that this will go up gradually in the future. So in 10 to 12 or 12 to 15 years, it may be up as high, it may be doubled, and perhaps even higher than doubled of what would come in. Again, it is obviously not a commitment because it can only be committed each year by a specific legislative appropriation. And there is sufficient time involved here that a municipality such as Kodiak, which very much wants its land and may be able to get its land depending on what falls out from the Native Claim Settlement Act selections, will have an option to sit and wait to see what does fall out, and only then, if they can't get the land, would they decide to come into the in lieu payment fund. Are there any specific questions on that?
Is there going to be any holdup or hang-up on getting the patent of this land after it is? This seems to have been the trouble previously.
No. In fact, this is going to remove those roadblocks. There are specific time requirements in here. Once a municipality selects land after it's been reviewed by both the state and municipality, the state has 9 months within which to determine whether or not it is approved. A good portion of that is tied up under public notice procedures, et cetera, which we are required by law to undertake. And once that's been approved, we have to and can issue patent within 90 days after we receive an approved plat of survey by the municipality. And that should, in conjunction with the people to handle these logistics, should be able to move this very, very quickly. The passage of this act, a bill right here, with the existing amount of approved acreage, which we already have, is going to make available about 250,000 acres to municipalities, if not overnight, almost. And as soon as that land has been surveyed, and a number of municipalities have substantial amounts of that surveyed already, that will be transferred within probably 90 days. So it'll be very, very quickly.
Mr. Snyder?
Yes, how did you wind up with that formula of 1,500, 750, 350?
This formula was not worked out by the state. It was basically worked out among the communities or the municipalities involved. The two that were most involved are the two that I mentioned that really appear to be in this, Kodiak and Anchorage. And that was the agreed total that they came to agreement on. Well, that's very true. But I think the other side of that, Representative Snyder, was the realization by those communities that if we were even to consider probably what the value of land was, the amount of money involved would be so astronomical that it just would not be politically feasible to consider it.
Mr. Kelly.
Number one, what would happen if the borough were to be formed, say, this summer, Somerset, a new third class borough in the state? Would they fall under this act? Would they be allowed 10% of that?
Okay, under the terms, a succinct answer is no. The bill essentially ends the existing program, but as was testified by both the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, we think that the ability to give land to a municipality where it's needed and appropriate is certainly an appropriate thing that the legislature has the authority to do. The problem that I think we're all worried about, and I think that most existing municipalities who have fought this problem would agree to, is that that should not be on a basis where one definition is to fit all municipalities in the state. By that, I mean if a municipality is formed, probably the last thing it needs, if we're talking about one of the unorganized areas of the borough right now, the last thing we need is to suddenly say to them, well, we're not really going to give you any money to get going, but we're going to give you 10% of whatever state land happens to be in your area with all the responsibilities and costs of managing it. I think you may want to look at a municipality and say, okay, we feel that, X number of acres is appropriate. As an example, and I think Southeast is a good example here, we have a situation where you have communities where if they're only entitled to get 10% of the land, the state has to have a 10 times that amount of land available for them to select. How much more sensible to look at the situation and say, this specific acreage figure is what we feel is appropriate for this community at this time, instead of saying 10% of the acreage, which they may never get because the state may never decide to select any area, or the state may turn around and trade a major portion of it away in response to, say, the D2 question and trying to get some state interest in some type of D2 withdrawal.
My other question then is, the Chugach State Park there in the Anchorage area, was that land taken into consideration when the 10% was allocated to Anchorage?
Yes. The high point for Anchorage is vacant, unreserved, and unappropriated land was just before creation of the park, and so they got their 10%. The next six-month period, that total just plummeted, but they stayed high at the 10%.
Now, were we entitled to 10% of the land prior to Chugach State Park being formed?
The initial act was passed in 1964. The park was created, I think it was 1970. And I think Anchorage is title attached about late 1968 or early 69.
So in fact, the creation of that state park meant that Anchorage wouldn't in no way be able to receive their 10% of their land.
It probably meant that they would never receive all of it. They received and probably can receive about half of the total, but not all of it. Which is why Anchorage has felt, and rightfully so, that they are entitled to some form of settlement under the area. And just because there's no land does not mean that they don't have a right to receive something.
Do you want to ask a question?
Just wanted a question on the value that is placed on land that cannot be acquired under the original act, how do you compensate for the inconvenience?
I don't understand.
But how do you compensate for land that a municipality could not acquire because the land was not available for selection, and then you put in the program and you develop a fund from which you can trade off in lieu, take money in lieu of land.
Mm-hmm.
And all these years, the municipalities, for some reason or other, have not been acquired their full and been able to acquire their full entitlement. How do you compensate for the inconvenience? There's no way of.
I don't know. I understand your question. It's not something that has even come up as far as needing to be addressed. I think that the municipalities that have not been able to fulfill their entitlement, who have actively attempted to do that, feel that getting this bill passed, which will give them the framework within which we can go forward, is the best redress that they can possibly get on this. There are some municipalities here that have never made land selections that we're entitled to, and who are going to probably benefit handsomely under this, but they've never even indicated an interest that they wanted to select. So it's hard. Again, it expands the whole spectrum from those that have been trying for a long time, and most of them have tried, have received substantial amounts of land, to those that have an entitlement now that they just never attempted to do it, to others that have entitlements now that thought they had entitlements before but didn't have entitlements before. It's a real can of worms.
What about the legal expenses, the administrative expenses that these municipalities have been incurring since the inception of the Act, trying, and is this ever compensated in some way except for the fact that they may be successful in acquiring some land?
It's not been addressed in this bill. Okay, the rest of the bill is, with one exception, kind of the last exception, are pretty much non-substantive in nature. They're more or less technical aspects, and I'll go over them briefly. One, on page 9, section 210, is merely an indication or authorization for authority, which really just now just lays it out a little bit more clearly here, for a municipality, if it wishes to exchange lands with the state, to consider these land exchanges, etc. And it indicates that the requirements for public notice and public review are there. It relieves a municipality from having to undergo the provisions of 3850, which was the very strict land exchange legislation which was passed last year for exchanges between the state as a governmental entity and private individuals or corporations. The section 212 on page 9 is a statement of policy where it indicates that if certain municipalities are completely surrounded by federal lands, don't have enough, either their entitlement is exhausted or they don't have entitlement, etc., that it'll be the policy of the state to select these lands and to make them available either directly to the municipality for public purposes or to sell or lease these lands for whatever private development and expansion needs exist. The section is specific in subsection C on page 10, and indicating that the existing authority for the division to transfer lands under our public purposes section 315, is not limited at all. We have and will continue to find this a tremendously flexible tool when the municipality needs land for a school, for a municipal disposal site, for any one of a number of purposes. We can give it to the municipality for no consideration as long as it's used for those public purposes. Section 214 on page 10 speaks to, you might say, the legal question. Two municipalities right now are engaged in litigation with the state concerning the interpretation under the old act. And what this essentially says is, in a nutshell, any municipality that wishes to pursue its litigation has every right to do so, of course, but they have to make a decision within 60 days whether they want to pursue the litigation and take the benefits that will come or the losses from that litigation, or they can drop that and take the benefits under this act. in the vast majority of cases, the benefits under this act, of course, are far superior to anything they would probably be able to obtain if they decided to go to court. The other sections allow for the adoption of regulations. 218 has a section on definitions, which are used throughout the chapter. And finally, Section 3 of the bill speaks to restrictions on sale, lease, or other disposal of agricultural or grazing land. In the last 2 or 3 years, the legislature has indicated some strong legislative intent that the agricultural basis or land resource in the state should be conserved. And under existing law, the state cannot dispose of anything but agricultural or grazing rights on lands that are classified for those purposes. What this amendment does to that section is say basically the same thing for disposing of lands, but in the cases of municipalities, it draws a line, again, that compromise line. It says that any lands which are approved to a municipality now, which is a very sizable portion, as I say, it's going to be close to about 250,000 acres, any of those lands which are classified for agricultural and grazing purposes would go in fee title to municipalities. But any lands which would be selected in the future that might be agricultural or grazing, the municipality would only receive the agricultural and grazing rights. Now, of course, nothing requires the municipality to select those lands. There are other lands that they can select. If they wish to select those lands, those are the rights that they would get, the agricultural and grazing rights. And at any time in the future, if the other rights, whether it's settlement rights, development rights, subdivision rights, whatever, should ever be disposed of by the state, those rights would have to go directly to that municipality at that time for no consideration. They would essentially go free. And that about wraps it up with respect to anything of substance in the act. I'd like to take any questions and then maybe just outline in about 2 or 3 minutes the reasons why the state, and I'm fairly confident I'm speaking for the other municipalities, why we feel that this bill needs to be passed this year and what's going to happen in the interim.
Other questions?
On that note, all they get is the surface, right? If it's coal, gold, or anything else, or oil or gas, then the state...
That's right. That's always been the law. The same.
The mineral rights and oil.
Right.
Mr. Anderson?
On page 9, under the authorization for land exchange, 2019-210, this would give the director the authority to exchange state land with the municipality when it is in the public interest.
That's correct.
And there's no legislative review, nothing.
What this does, it pretty closely tracks the existing law for land exchanges that the legislature passed last year, in that where exchanges are made that are, where changes are made between a public body and a private body, they can be made for exactly equal value without any legislative oversight as long as specific documentation is available, and the state's pretty much always operated under that situation. When we come to the point of saying that we're considering making an exchange where the values, the hard dollar values that can be tied down by an appraiser, are not known or cannot be known simply because the value involved isn't something that's reducible to economic terms, under the existing land trade legislation, where state is dealing with a private entity, this must go before the legislature for review. In this particular case, where we're talking about trading with another governmental body, any type of legislative review is not involved, and I think the reason is simply this. Under the existing authority, as I mentioned before, what we call public purpose authority of Section 315, which has been part of the record, I guess, almost since statehood, the Division of Lands can essentially give a municipality 1,000 acres for a municipal purpose, whatever that may be, as long as, you know, there is a specific purpose and a finding is made. And this has not, and I think from the standpoint of the flexibility that municipalities and the state need to deal, it does not really require and should not have a legislative overview. In this situation, what we're really saying is that in exchange for that 1,000 acres that the state would give, the municipality is going to give something back. And as long as it is between two governmental agencies, with a public review and public notice procedures of proposed trade, a public hearing if anybody asks for one, that the public interest is probably pretty much protected. You've got two government agencies under two fairly strict sets of statutes, which they have to adhere to before an exchange would be valid.
Are there other questions for Mr. Smith? I guess I have a couple. The first question has to do with the entitlement for the North Slope Borough. Why is that so small? It's the largest land area in the state.
That's true. First of all, just because it encompasses the largest land area would not necessarily mean it would have a high entitlement, because the Act, and I'm talking about the original Act as opposed to the present bill, only talked about state lands. Now, it happens in this case that there are sizable amounts of state land up there, but the rest of the area that's federal land would not have any effect on this. The reason is because those large areas and expanses up there were classified into retention categories, is the term we use for it, which under existing law does not allow the state to dispose of interest in those lands. They were classified primarily for oil and gas and other mineral exploration purposes. And this actually is the genesis of the problem that exists now between the state and the North Slope Borough. The North Slope Borough several years ago selected just under 200,000 acres of land, which pretty much was right on top of the Prudhoe Bay oil field. And the state said, no, it's not in the best interest of the state to transfer that land to a municipality. How can we develop our subsurface energy resource if in this case, the oil companies, the lessees, have got to operate under a totally different set of regulations on the surface for how they site things, et cetera. And the borough disagreed and went to court, and a decision was handed down in January of this year, which backed the state very strongly. They said that it was the determination of the division of lands as to what was in the best interest of the state, and that this was certainly a rational decision on that basis. And so what you see at 645 acres happens to be 10% of the vacant land that does exist up there. And that vacant, unappropriated, unreserved land, as defined in the Act, is basically some industrial sites up there that we have set up for the various agencies and companies supporting oil field activity to work upon.
The land was classified, and therefore it was not vacant, unappropriated, or unreserved?
That's correct.
Is that your... Okay. I had one other question. Let's see if it goes back. Go ahead, Mr. Kelly.
The fact that they're in court is probably a good indication that they're not. As Representative Anderson asked about input from here, we have sent several times copies of our earlier drafts, copies of recent drafts, spoken to some people, agreed to meet with people who just didn't show up from the North Slope Borough to try to talk to them about this. And I think that we've made a very good faith attempt to try to see if there were problems and questions. And to my knowledge, nobody has said anything today. I do know that they are considering pressing their court suit, and if that's the case, this legislation really doesn't affect them, because under the waiver clause, or the choice of benefits clause, if they do proceed, they do not receive any benefits under this Act at all. They will either they'll receive whatever the court decides that they are entitled to under the old Act, and this is a normal way of handling these type of situations. All the other municipalities that are very much impacted by the legislation have basically agreed on this and have asked that we move forward with it.
Why don't you take just a couple of minutes to tell us why we ought to enact it this year?
Okay. Briefly, before I get asked the question, which is inevitably asked after all these 8 points about, you know, why are we just getting going with this now, let me say that this bill was actually introduced in early March. I've had several drafts since then, to the point that this draft is one with which virtually everybody's in agreement. Rather than come in with a bill, you know, the first day of the session, when we had probably 10 or 12 communities in the state who still had a lot of disagreements, and try to testify in a bill which is obviously as important as this one was, we would just not have done anything. And everybody agreed that the sessions that we had, where we were able to hammer these things out, were by far the way to go about it. But despite that, as I said, I think we can list 8 very good reasons why we have to really pass it this year if we're going to go about managing lands at all. and everybody's affected by this, not just the state, but particularly the municipalities. First of all, some of these municipalities, as Representative Anderson had mentioned, are waiting a long time to try to get their land, and this will get that land into their hands. Secondly, under the terms particularly the Cook Inlet Land Exchange, certain acreages will be made available to Cook Inlet region and some of the village corporations within the region. These lands will come primarily from the Mat-Su and particularly the Kenai municipality boroughs. If those boroughs don't know what their entitlement is, so that they know in fact how this distribution of land under the terms of the exchange will be made, they are going to be very severely impacted. I would not be surprised that if the bill does not pass, that they will probably go into court in order to protect their interests. They don't want to, but they would almost have no choice. And again, we will essentially stop any movement of land, and I mean any movement of land or resource interests, in any municipality that does go to court, claiming that they do not have enough land to meet their entitlement. Thirdly,
Mr. Miles.
Why would they go to court now after 13 years?
Simply in the case particularly of Kenai, because of the commitments that the state has made under the terms of the Cook Inlet Exchange, and because of some other exchanges, which is my third point here, which the state and some of the native village corporations are interested in making, Kenai questions whether there is enough land within their borders, enough good land within their borders to fulfill their entitlement. And they are very worried that they may be sent what they think is across the inlet to some of this less desirable land on the other side. And they feel that the entitlement that's in here for them, approximately 155,000 acres, once they know that that is their entitlement, they know the framework within which they have to determine how much acreage is going and where they're going with the implementation of the land exchange. Without that knowledge, they don't have any entitlement. They don't know what it is. And we've been told that they would probably go to court to stop any exchange of or alienation of land from state ownership until they know what their rights are and they can see what part of the pie they're going to get. In other municipalities where there is a lot of extra land, this probably isn't as serious. But in Kenai, it's quite critical.
Why didn't they do it a year ago?
Why didn't they go to court a year ago? We were within a hair breadth of going to court a year ago.
What stopped them?
Because we agreed that we would be able to work and come back to the legislature this year with this type of program. They knew that before they had an assurance from the state that before the state actually began alienating land under the terms of the exchange, which did not have to occur until next September, that they would have another chance to come to the legislature with this with a compromise bill.
Mr. Phillips.
You said that you didn't want to introduce this legislation in the early part of the session, and yet we're almost to the end, and now you're telling this committee that we need to pass this bill out. My question is, you told people in Kenai you could work on it, the final draft, as recommended by you people, would be ready for this committee a couple months ago, so we can look at it. Seems to me it just doesn't make sense to me at all.
One of the problems, Representative Phillips, and I think I probably explained this before you came in this morning, probably the biggest hang-up on this was the total lack of information, of hard information about acreage totals, et cetera. The Department of Natural Resources, unfortunately, never computerized their information system. Somebody made a decision a decade ago that it really wasn't necessary. And the amount of land and acreage we're talking about are mind-boggling. It's virtually beyond human capabilities of doing it in a fast manner. We had to go back and research files that go back at sometimes almost a month after statehood as far as land selections, status, et cetera. This has taken 18 months to do. We did not finish that until last November with that type of information. And so to the question that I was asked by almost every municipal mayor or manager in the last 2 years, how many acres am I entitled to? My response had to be, we don't know, we're working on it. We first got anchorages first. It was a small community and they were the ones that were hammering the hardest. Then we got Mat-Su's, then we got Kenai, then we got Fairbanks, then we got Kodiak. It was just a matter of plugging through and pulling people from other tasks to do it. And that was one of the problems. They didn't know how many acres they were entitled to.
Just have a couple more minutes and I want a couple of announcements. So.
The third point, the villages of Seldovi and Aklutna have selected large amounts of land within the state parks. They have approached us and told us they want to make land trades. we can't move forward with these type of trades until such time as we know what the land entitlements and status of land is within their surrounding communities. Four, this unknown really hampers any type of legislative action with respect to any land areas. For instance, you have before you a bill for a refuge on the west side of Cook Inlet. The Kenai Borough has said we have no problems, we think that's probably an appropriate use of that land, etc. But until such time as we know what our entitlement is, we can't take the chance on that land being just taken away from us, and we'll probably lobby, in fact, very hard, that they either have an overriding loophole clause that they can go in even after the refuge is there and select lands, or else they may even campaign against it, which they don't wish to do. Five, if in fact we find a situation such as the Kenai or Matsu where we remain in court, we may not be able to do anything with respect to disposing of lands within those municipalities. We'd be completely at the, we could be held by the throat by any court which indicated that there's a good point on the part of the municipality, and because we're already locked in litigation with two municipalities, it probably would continue. Sixth, and again on the courts, if we don't move ahead here, probably by this time next year, you're going to have one, maybe two court decisions, which essentially may take this out of your hand. If a court decides that a certain entitlement has vested with a municipality under the old act, there's virtually nothing this legislature can do to unvest that right. It's a constitutional right they have. And what you see here is a bill which these municipalities have essentially agreed that they are satisfied with this solution. The state is satisfied with it, which is why we think we should press ahead with it.
Can you run to that point again? Certainly. If the court decides what, did you say?
In 1963, the legislature granted certain rights to municipalities. Nobody really knows what those rights are. The only way those rights can be established is either by an agreement by a municipality that X is what they feel their entitlement is. The state agrees to it, and they essentially come to a contractual agreement. Or, if there is disagreement on what that right is, a court essentially establishes what the legislature meant in 1963. If Community A was willing to settle for 500 acres under this bill, but the bill doesn't pass, and they go to court, and the court says, under the terms of the original agreement, you were really entitled to 1,000 acres. They then have a vested right to 1,000 acres, and it is just unconstitutional for anybody to go back and say that they were not entitled to that under that original act. The seventh point concerns primarily the southeastern communities. The state is embarking and will, within the next year, select the vast majority of its statehood entitlement from the forest. The national forests within the state, primarily Tongass and Chugach, the majority being in Tongass. In order for the southeast municipalities to be able to get the lands they want, they need to know what their entitlement is. Otherwise, they're going to be operating under the old law, which says they can only get 10% of the vacant, unreserved, and unappropriated lands. The settlement in here with the southeast communities is much more favorable to those communities then would be the 10% clause, because there is no way the state would be selecting 10 times the amount of acreage which these municipalities are entitled to here. They just would not be in the position to work with the state in coming up with the acreage that they feel they need for their community expansion needs. And lastly, and this comes just from being the manager of the state's lands, it is really untenable to try to work with the community for land management, rational resource management purposes, when, because of existing law, 13-year-old law, you're forced to face this fellow or this group across the table in court. He's arguing for something, we both kind of agree on an answer, but because the answer can't be nailed down, we're in a situation of being antagonists. And it just isn't working. What we need now is close coordination with municipalities, not the standoff we've had for the last 13 years.
Thank you very much, Mr. Smith. Are there questions for Mr. Smith? Appreciate very much your being here. Thank you very much. I'm sorry we're going to have to, we have our session at 9 this morning rather than at 10, so we're going to have to break. The members will find telegrams from Sitka, Matsu, and a note from Kodiak here representing their support of the bill. We have notified the mayor of every municipality mentioned by name in the bill. and asked them for their statement as to whether or not they support it, and mailed this bill to them. I believe it was on Monday. We will have Mayor Gilman from Kenai here on Monday, and we have asked, followed up with phone calls to each mayor, asking them please to let us know their feelings on Monday if possible. And so we will have heard from the rest of the municipalities by Monday. Oh, Sullivan, yes, excuse me. Here are copies of the pertinent sections of the Statehood Act, if anyone would like copies of the pertinent sections of the Statehood Act that relates to state selection of federal lands. Okay, we'll adjourn the meeting.